Hey everyone, welcome to Taking Stock. Last fall, I had the opportunity to listen to a presentation that Aaron Chio gave. The title was From Growth to Optimization, Readying for the Future. And he shared his extensive research of over 350 companies through the 2008 recession, and specifically how different companies were able to manage through those challenging times and come out on the other side in a stronger position. So if we fast forward to where we are today, we sit here on April 1st amidst a world of incredibly uncertain times. Things are changing by the day. I wanted to invite Aaron to join us this morning to share some of his perspectives on those lessons learned from the Great Recession of 2008 and how we could potentially incorporate those perspectives into the critical decisions we're making as we battle through everything related to the coronavirus. Aaron's going to talk about that fine balance of growth versus optimization and why that's so important today more than ever. He's going to talk about the consumer products industry and why there are specific aspects of the industry that lead them to be more resilient in times of uncertainty. And then he'll share some thoughts around keys to success, things in and around organizational agility, things that will help companies be more resilient through these challenging times and times of uncertainty. So enjoy this conversation with Aaron, and we'll talk in a bit. Hey, Aaron, welcome to Taking Stock.
Hey, Steve, good morning. Thanks for having me here.
I hope you guys are doing okay in this craziness of the world that we're currently living in and staying safe and healthy.
Yeah, so far so good, all things considered.
Yeah, good. So this is going to be a very timely discussion. I want to get your perspective on a few things. Last week, I was having a discussion with one of our consumer products clients, and we were talking about the impacts of the coronavirus on the CP industry and the decisions that their specific business, in this case, that they were being forced to make to manage through, you know, these uncertain times. I don't think their business is different than others, but similar to many companies, he shared how they are focusing their energy, rightfully so, on more mission critical initiatives that are primarily focused on their ability to serve their consumers and to meet increasing demands. But they're also really struggling with making sure they don't lose sight of where they need to invest for the future. So it made me think back to the presentation you and Sebastian gave back in Chicago. And you talked a lot about growth versus optimization. And in regular times, growth versus optimization is a challenge that often makes or breaks the success of companies. But I think it's fair to say that balance is more critical today than ever. If you can talk a little bit about that balance of growth versus optimization, and, you know, can you have both? Are they mutually exclusive? Talk a little bit about your perspective on, you know, the topic more broadly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, going into last year, we'd heard a lot and done a lot of research and seen a lot of research with regards to what was coming around the corner for 2020. So in preparation for that, we had this hypothesis that, you know, classic strategy kind of teaches us that focus is key to win. And if you go back to, you know, the Michael Porter's and competitive strategy, and this idea that winners tend to exhibit one of two traits, you either are able to drive a cost advantage or you drive your competitive advantage to differentiation. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, strategy kind of tells us that focusing on one of the two is really key to win. But the reality is that as we work with clients all over the world and across different sectors, we see that some of the most successful organizations are actually the ones that are able to balance these two ideas of growth and optimization. And it's not an easy challenge to do. But it is those companies that are able to play in both fields at the same time that tend to outpace the market. And so in that context, leaders need to constantly be able to balance and prioritize growth and optimization, to be able to go on the offense when times are good and the market is doing well and your customers are reacting and to any of your strategic decisions, but also be able to go on the defense in a way and optimize your organization when times aren't necessarily going as smoothly as you wanted them to be. Mm-hmm. Companies need to be able to invest to grow, but at the same time, there's this need to continue to streamline the organization and drive costs out of the organization. So again, this kind of continuum of growth and optimization and this tension between those two things. We see that, for example, in CPG, the diversity of portfolio and approaches for different brands to either go expand the breadth of their portfolios, but also from a growth perspective, but also the need to focus and optimize and go deeper in a shorter, kind of narrower field of focus from a portfolio perspective. This idea of diversification as well as it relates to growth, but also the need to simplify those portfolios to really focus on the things that you do best. And then, you know, at the same time, and I think it's very relevant to today, your growth mentality is all about thinking longer term, what's going to happen 12, 24, 36, 48 months out. But then optimization is all about the shorter and kind of the midterm, your ability to be able to execute, you know, from an operational excellence perspective in the short term. So it's this dichotomy that leaders face on a day-to-day basis around growth and optimization that I think is tremendously accentuated with market conditions today. And we see that some of the most successful organizations are able to successfully balance these two things. And it's the role of the leader not only to balance these, you know, to do one over the other and switch back, but is how do you continue to kind of mix them together to be successful in the marketplace.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you referenced a few things there, and we'll get to some of the specific characteristics in more detail on CPG in a minute, because I am curious to hear your perspective there. But certainly for leaders, the ability to, and I think, again, this is exacerbated in times like today, but quickly react and quickly have the organizational agility to be able to shift. I mean, we're seeing it within CPG right now, where examples of what, you know, P&G might be doing, or companies like Pernod Ricard, or companies in the automotive industry who are quickly shifting manufacturing lines to be able to serve the global pandemic. Those are obviously extreme cases, but talk a little bit about organizational agility and how important that is to be able to shift at a moment's notice to meet changing consumer demand.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, we'll deep dive a little bit on that in a second, but it's one of the five what we call ingredients that mm-hmm. we've discovered that make organizations successful in this idea of being able to balance growth and optimization. But, you know, organizational agility is all around the leader's ability to quickly adapt to changing conditions. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's about, you know, your ability to embrace uncertainty. Sometimes rather they're trying to anticipate a crisis or formulate a plan to deal with each individual element, is how do you empower your organization and create an environment that allows you to have an adaptive strategy and planning that is always marked and underlined by, you know, some visionary leadership and a combination of this idea of growth and optimization. So a lot of the times, especially in CPG, to your point, you know, our supply chains are tend to be very well delineated and balanced, because we're all around, our focus is around driving efficiencies in our supply chains, and, you know, in extent, you're trying to smooth out any curves in your mm-hmm. demand. But today's reality is that's not really the case. So how do you embark in this journey of empowering, allowing your organization to be able to flex and go with the market, in a, you know, kind of go with the waves in terms of ebbing and flowing, in terms of the resources and the capabilities and the attention that different parts of the organization need to take place. And if you think about that, that may be from an optimization perspective, but at the same time, we know that there will be light at the end of the tunnel. Sure. How do you continue to ensure that you're investing and maintaining a growth mentality to be able to, in a way, attack the market once we bounce back from these difficult times?
Yeah, and that gets back to, my, you know, again, back to the conversation that I had with my client last week, which is knowing that you need to meet the problems of today, but you absolutely can never lose sight of what you need to be doing to invest for the future. So I want to kind of move ahead to, you know, you had done in typical Aaron style, an exhaustive research, I think, you of over 350 publicly traded companies from the 2008 recession. A few things that you concluded. Number one, two of the most resilient sectors were CPG and life sciences. So I want to get a little bit of your perspective specifically on the characteristics of CPG. We hit upon some of them, but what is it about the CPG industry that has made it so resilient through the years? And then I want to get a little bit of your perspective on your other findings, which is some of those recipes for success. You hit upon organizational agility already, but first talk a little bit more about CPG. What is it about the characteristics of that industry that makes us perhaps a little bit more resilient at some of these swings in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really fascinating because there were some really counterintuitive findings around who you would expect to grow. And what we found out was that really, those brands that focus on consumers' basic needs and wants proved to be extremely successful. And retailers and CPG organizations, they primarily focus on three things. And we call these focusing on the wallet, focusing on the heart, and then focusing on the head. And this is just a way for us to kind of create a framework to wrap our head around what they do successfully. But as it relates to the head piece, this is all around how brands really focus on the functional elements, kind of the brain elements of the power of their brand. So How can we save time to mom or to dad or to the kids or to the consumer? How do we make it convenient? How do you make the purchases easy to easy to transact, and how do you give the consumer the enough and right information that they need at the right time and at the right place? So really focusing on the functional elements of what that consumer really needs. Mm-hmm. The second piece was around what we call the wallet. And I think this is all around the value equation. How can you show to the consumer the value of the transaction and the value of the relationship? So, how are you saving money to that consumer to provide him with the right promotions, with the right value that is relevant to them, and however they describe the value equation, whether it's primarily functional from a monetary perspective or from a time and convenience element. And then the third element related to CPGs was all around how do you focus on the heart? How do you connect more deeply with a consumer in a way that kind of addresses what they need, that addresses how they're feeling about the market realities, and that really connects with that consumer at a more deeper level to understand the values and what's really important, particularly in a time of need and a time of crisis like we're living today and like we lived in the 2007, 2009 recession. So we looked at these three things and we said, well, these are really interesting, but we want to dig a little bit deeper and look at some of the overarching themes, kind of the glue that connected all these different organizations and the thread that was common across all of them. And that's where these five ingredients that you've referenced before came to fruition.
Yeah. So we hit upon organizational agility. We hit a little bit upon investing for the future. Talk more about that. So how do companies ensure that you are, there's so many different phrases you could use, how do you, continue to invest while the train's moving real quick, right? Or how do you ensure that you're focused on the short-term needs with an eye on the long-term, however you want to phrase it? What do organizations need to do to invest for the future?
Absolutely. And this one's just really all around companies that stood out and were able to outperform the market, were able to make the trade-offs. And at the end of the day, strategy is all about trade-offs and making decisions. So while some companies tended to focus largely on optimization during the times when things get tough, cost-cutting, kind of really focusing on the cost side of the equation, there were a few outstanding companies that really focused on investing for the future. I'll give you one example. We looked at one of these successful companies in CPG, Fortune 50 company, $20 billion in sales, and they increased their consumer marketing spend by 16% during the recession. Their SG&A grew 17%, meaning we didn't really see any offset to put more marketing dollars and try to reduce it in headcount. And they were actually able to grow their market share and their retail penetration despite the fact that during these tough times, private label was really outpacing a lot of these categories in the market. So they realized that at the time when competitors were maybe holding their pockets tight and cutting costs and not necessarily investing in trade and marketing, these companies decided to double down and they were one of the more resilient CPGs that we saw during this time frame, and they were able to ride this recession for, you know, the recession for about 3 years. So yeah, investing in the future is all around really focusing on the trade-offs and then placing some bets in where you think the market is going to go and where you can get the best ROI.
Okay. Awesome. And you also talked about the simplification of the strategy. And I find that, again, very relevant today, where organizations are trying to, in a lot of way, reduce a lot of the clutter and the noise within their organizations and focus in on what they need to do to, again, meet the needs of today. How do companies, and specifically consumer products companies, kind of adapt a mentality of simplifying your strategy to ensure that you're managing through times of uncertainty?
Yeah, and I think this is also a principle that applies both in times of growth and times of optimizations. Sure. But what we saw is that the leading CPGs that outperformed the market had a very clear, easy to understand strategy. They passed what we call as the napkin test in terms of the simplicity of their ability to articulate the focus of what they wanted to do and how they needed to move in unison towards a shared common goal. And it's also really interesting because if you think about it, the strategy has to be able to translate all the way from the boardroom down to the front lines of the organization. And so it sounds a lot easier than it really is, but how do you create this simple way where people can understand what it is that they need to be doing on a day-to-day basis in a time when things are really changing? And oftentimes these were multi-year strategic imperatives that allow these companies to flex capabilities depending on conditions. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example of simplifying the strategy. We looked at another CPG that had launched back in 2005. So this is, you know, 4 to 5 years before the recession. Mm-hmm. They launched an initiative to really focus on driving and eliminating non-value added costs across a series of cross-functional areas. So they had embedded in the mentality, they call it holistic margin management. Mm-hmm. So they had embedded into the mentality this idea of driving costs out. When the recession hit, they had an unprecedented 9% inflation growth, which is, you know, for everybody that understands the markets, 1 to 2% CPI growth in the United States is the norm. 9% inflation growth, we're talking almost emerging market, pressures. But they were able to drive that out of their business by focusing really on their holistic margin management. And even though they had this 9% inflation growth, they actually were able to maintain their gross margins pretty flat, because they had embedded this idea of holistic margin management as part of their DNA, and everybody understood what it means to work across functions to drive non-value added costs, that were able to offset these increases. So this idea of simplifying the strategy and having those guideposts in place was really powerful for this company to succeed.
Yeah, one other that I want to get your perspective on is one that, again, I think is also very prevalent today. You talked about the need to create a common and shared purpose. I believe, you know, I've got a passion for the consumer products industry, and I believe that what separates the true market leaders are those that get everyone within their, not just their internal stakeholders, but their external stakeholders, i.e. their customers and their consumers, all aligned around that common sense of purpose. And often that sense of purpose is much bigger than the specific products that they sell. And I think, again, we're seeing that with some of the examples that I referenced earlier. Talk a little bit more about why the ability for companies to create that, you know, common shared purpose is so important for companies today.
Absolutely. And I think you alluded to the stakeholder piece, which is a great one. I think a lot of the times organizations can fall a little bit short or focus their or have a narrow focus in terms of the stakeholders that they're thinking about when it comes to any of these strategic imperatives and these ingredients that we've described. So their ability to think, you know, about their shareholders, to think about their customers, about the consumer, about their employees, about their community. And Steve, you're very familiar with the importance, as you mentioned, of creating a shared purpose around, you know, diversity and inclusion and promoting corporate mm-hmm. social responsibility. But what we found out about these companies is that they just were able to create a broader common and shared purpose around what they did in the market and what they stood for in the market. And, you know, it's pretty fascinating. I was reading an article yesterday on the Wall Street Journal about some of the spikes in demand. And there was a quote there from somebody at an Amazon warehouse, you know, frontline employee, mm-hmm. and they've had some challenges with the coronavirus. But he talked about, very interestingly, he talked about how the fact that he was there and how he was playing a vital role to get people the supplies that they needed,
yeah.
and how, you know, the elderly or people with health issues were dependent on the work that he was doing. And that was just a great example of how having a broader common and shared purpose around the work that you're doing allows companies to really, you know, not only survive, but also thrive in this environment. And one of the examples that we found during the research that we did, again, during the 2007-2009 recession, was this company, another CPG, who, you know, was donating about $90+ million to their communities, about 5% of their pre-tax earnings. And that was actually up about 4% from the previous year. And more than 80% it is really incredible. And more than 80% of their employees were actually volunteering in their communities. So creating this broader sense of the purpose and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis allows employees and organizations to really focus on, you know, reflecting the uncertainties of the market, but really staying true to the fact that, you know, daylight comes after a really long night.
Yeah, it's wonderfully said, and I can speak firsthand. I know working, I mentioned earlier, with Pernod Ricard and the pride that their employees are taking in the work that they're doing by transitioning from, you know, production from alcoholic beverage to hand sanitizers. They just take an immense amount of pride in that. And I think we're seeing a lot of that in the world today. And perhaps that is a glimmer of a shining light in what otherwise is incredibly challenging times. It's nice to see the humanity, and it's nice to see the sense of a shared purpose that we're all taking. So
absolutely.
Aaron, this was awesome. I always learn a ton when I chat with you, and I'm pretty sure that anyone who listens will be learning a ton as well. So thank you as always for your perspectives, and look forward to connecting again, hopefully in much better times.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Take care.
All right, thank you very much, Aaron, for your great perspective, and thanks everyone for listening through. You know, as I reflect upon the discussion, you know, we've said so many times over the past couple of weeks that, you know, we've never been through this before, and everything we're dealing with as it relates to the coronavirus is new, and we're learning on the fly, and we're figuring it all out, which I agree with all of that. However, I think there's a ton of value in looking back at similar struggles and similar times where we've faced adversity. And I think the Great Recession and some of the lessons learned through that, especially for organizations to think through, what are some of the critical decisions that you make along the way that allow you to be successful on the back end of this? I think it's important for us to think through those. And I appreciate Aaron sharing many of those. We're going to be having a discussion tomorrow where we're going to be talking about managing supply chains in today's uncertain world. And we're going to continue to have discussions that are of most relevance today as we battle through many of the challenges that we're all facing. So thank you as always for listening, and we'll talk soon.